Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Seshasayee Technologies Limited Q4 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference call over to Ms. Asha Gupta from EY LLP Investor Relations. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining Seshasayee Technologies Limited Q4 FY26 earnings call. The results and presentation have already been mailed to you, and you can also view them on our website at www.seshasayee.com. In case anyone does not have the copy of the investor presentation, press release, please do write to us, and we will be happy to share with you. To take us through the results today, we have the management of the company represented by Mr. Pragnyat Lalwani, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Gautam Jain, Whole-time Director, and Mr. Pawan Kumar, Chief Financial Officer. Mr. Pragnyat will start the call with a brief overview of the company and business update, which will be then followed by Pawan, who will take us through the financial performance for the quarter and full year, and then we will open the floor for Q&A session. As usual, I would like to remind you that anything that is mentioned in this call, which reflects any outlook for the future or which can be construed as forward-looking statement, must be viewed in conjunction with the risk and uncertainties that we face. These risks and uncertainties are included but not limited to what we have mentioned in the prospectus filed with SEBI and subsequent annual report that you can find on our website. Having said that, I will now hand over the call to Mr. Pragnyat. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Asha. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for the Q4 and full year FY26 earnings call. I hope all of you have had the opportunity to review our financial results and presentation. Let me quickly discuss the business highlights for the quarter and financial year 26. Post that, Pawan will take you through the financial update. During the quarter, we reported revenue from operations of rupees 404 crore, reflecting a growth of 8.1% sequentially and 9.6% on a YOY basis. The growth was supported by stronger execution across business verticals, improved throughput, and better contribution from diversified businesses, including communication and fulfillment solutions and IoT segments. Moving to the full year financial year 26 performance, we reported revenue from operations of rupees 1,441.1 crore, a drop of 1.5% on YOY basis. The decline during the year was primarily led by temporary moderation in the payment solutions business due to industry-wide factors. However, this was largely offset by the strong growth in our communication and fulfillment solutions business and continued scaling of IoT solutions business, technology-led offerings, enabling us to maintain overall stable performance with healthy margins. This reflects the increasing resilience of our business model, improved diversification across revenue streams, and a lower dependence on any single vertical. FY26 was a landmark year for Seshasayee, as the company completed its listing during the year, marking an important milestone in our journey. FY26 has been a year of transformation and transition for Seshasayee Technologies, where we have made deliberate efforts to diversify the business, strengthen our technology-led capabilities, and build future-ready platforms across our key verticals. During the year, we continued to invest in innovation, automation, premiumization, and new growth platforms, while also strengthening our focus on recurring and technology-driven businesses. This reflects our broader transition towards becoming a solutions-oriented and platform-led organization. Over the course of the year, we have continued to build on our strong and long-standing customer relationships across banking, BFSI, government, enterprise, retail, logistics, telecom, and technology ecosystems. This deep customer engagement has enabled us to sustain recurring revenues, increase wallet share, cross-sell integrated solutions, and expand into adjacent offerings. We believe FY26 should be viewed not only as a year of resilience during a softer industry phase, but also as a validation of our diversified and relationship-led business model. At CSSI, we do not evaluate our success purely based on revenue for a particular year. We continue to invest in innovation, new products and technology capabilities that are aligned with evolving customer needs. Many of the initiatives we are building today may not contribute materially in the short term, but are strategically important in creating future growth opportunities. Across our verticals, we are developing capabilities in advanced payment solutions, IoT-led ecosystems including RFID and traceability, and platform-led communication and fulfillment solutions. These investments are designed to position us strongly for long-term scaling. A key strength of our business continues to be the high proportion of recurring and annuity-like revenue streams. Across our verticals, around 97% to 98% of our revenue is recurring in nature, driven by ongoing card issuance programs, regulatory and compliance-driven communication requirements, fulfillment engagements, and repeat ordering cycles in RFID and IoT solutions. This provides stability and visibility to our earnings, while also allowing us to benefit from new customer additions and project-based opportunities that offer additional growth. As we look ahead to FY27, we remain cautiously optimistic while being mindful of global macroeconomic and geopolitical uncertainties, including supply chain disruptions, currency volatility, and broader demand conditions. However, we believe our diversified business model, strong customer relationships, recurring revenue base, and continued investments in future-ready technologies position us well to navigate such challenging environments. We would like to update that our Navi Mumbai and Kunli facilities have become operational in Q4 of FY26, while Nagpur and Bangalore facilities are still under construction. We would like to inform that we have filed for 6 new patents in FY26 across products and solutions, taking the total tally to 19 patent applications filed, out of which 5 have been granted till date. In terms of business segment update, payment solutions. Payment solutions contribute approximately 50% to the total revenue in FY26. This segment was impacted by broader industry factors, including moderation in issuance volume from PSU and private banks, lower renewal card volumes due to lower base year issuance during COVID-19 period, as well as timing differences in renewal cycles and tighter regulatory and compliance environments for banks and fintechs. However, we have not lost a single customer and added 21 new customers across banks and fintechs, contributing meaningfully to revenue as we continue to strengthen our customer base and market reach initiatives. We continue to see strong trends in premiumization, increasing opportunities in transit ecosystems, and a strengthening pipeline in advanced card products such as metal cards, biometric cards, and other secure chip form factors. We believe that as banking cycles normalize, we expect gradual improvement in volumes going forward. We were the first Indian card manufacturer to file for our metal card patents in October 2021, as well as the first to get global payment scheme approvals for our metal cards in March 2023. We would like to share that we have been granted our patent for metal cards in February 2026. This reflects our continued focus on product innovation, engineering, enhancing our R&D capabilities, and intellectual property creation across secure payment portfolio. This has led us to have a formidable portfolio of metal card variants, each targeting different customer segments. In this quarter, we won a multi-year tender from a leading PSU bank, which represents approximately 8.7 crores in revenue over the tender period. We would like to update that the domestic payment scheme RFP and global fintech RFP for metal card variants is still under process and evaluation. Communication and fulfillment solutions. Communication and fulfillment solutions contributed 39% of total revenue in FY26 and recorded a strong YOY growth of 29%. Over the years, this segment has evolved into a technology-driven integrated solutions platform combining secure communication, fulfillment digital workflow orchestration, traceability, and logistics integration capabilities. Backed on our proprietary platforms like Rubik, HitaTrack, and IOMS, as well as pan-India execution infrastructure, the business is increasingly positioned as a strategic partner for customers managing large-scale, secure, and time-sensitive communication and fulfillment requirements. The segment continues to benefit from strong customer relationships, operational scalability, and recurring business opportunities, making it an important contributor to the company's growth, profitability, and cash flow profile. IoT solutions. IoT solutions contributed 11% to total revenue in FY26 and witnessed a growth of 45% on YoY basis. IoT is gaining traction as a long-term growth engine driven by increasing adaptation of RFID, growing importance of traceability across supply chains, and rising demand for sensor-based and platform-led ecosystems. We believe our integrated capabilities and strong positioning in this space will enable us to capture these opportunities effectively over time. Continuing from our earlier quarterly initiatives, we saw momentum build up in the project rolled out for one of the largest Indian retailers across their major fashion brands. Using our integrated approach of using technologies such as RFID, Bluetooth, and other sensor-based analytics, we are seeing good traction in projects being undertaken currently to solve real-world problems across spectrum of industries such as retail, renewable, healthcare, power generation, and also global capability centers, GCCs. During this quarter, our Bangalore facility has received the GSMA SAS UP certification for SIM and eSIM manufacturing and personalization, data generation, PKI certificate handling, making the company one of the few global players with this integrated capabilities for eSIMs. I'm also happy to share that the SIM card division started contributing materially to revenue in this quarter. Going forward, growth will be driven by premiumization trends in payments, expansion IoT and traceability solutions, platform-led fulfillment ecosystems, increasing opportunities in transit and secure identity solutions, as well as scaling of newer technologies and international opportunities. The Board of Directors has recommended a dividend of INR rupees 2.5 per share, reaffirming our commitment to shareholders. With that, I will now request Pawan to take you through the financial and operational highlights for the quarter. Over to you, Pawan.
Thank you, Pranay sir. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining our Q4 and FY26 earnings call. Let me start with a quick summary of our performance for the quarter and then the full year gone by. In Q4 FY26, our total revenue stood at approximately 405 crores, up 8.1% quarter-on-quarter and 9.6% year-on-year. This growth was primarily driven by stronger execution across verticals with strong traction in communication fulfillment and IoT solutions. EBITDA for the quarter came in at approximately 125 crores with an EBITDA margin of 30.8%, an increase of 330 bits YOY. EBITDA margin expansion was supported by stronger operating leverage, improved business mix, better cost absorption, procurement efficiencies, and structurally improved margins across operating segments. Our PAT for the quarter stood at approximately 82 crores with a PAT margin at 20.2%, up 316 bits YOY. The profitability improvement was aided also by lower finance costs following debt repayment post the IPO, which resulted in improved earnings conversion and stronger bottom line performance. In terms of revenue mix across our verticals, payment solutions continue to be the largest vertical, which contributed 47.5% of the percentage of the revenue, followed by communication and fulfillment at approximately 39.8% and IoT solutions at 12.4% in Q4 FY26. For the full year FY26, our total revenue stood at 1,441 crores, a slight decline of 1.5% year-on-year. EBITDA came at 394 crores with an EBITDA margin of 27.4%, an increase of 204 bips YOY. Our PAT stood at 240 crores with a PAT margin of 16.7%, which is 146 bips YOY. The overall revenue performance should be considered in context of a relatively soft demand environment during parts of the year, particularly within the payment card issuance and renewal ecosystem, including moderation in BFSI volumes. Despite broadly stable performance on top line, consolidated profitability improved significantly in FY26. The top 10 customers
contributed almost 62.8% of our revenues, and more than 96.6% of our revenues came from existing customers, showcasing the stickiness of customer relationships, strong renewal and repeat business characteristics of our business model. On the balance sheet and cash flow front, we remained well capitalized. As of 31st March 2026, we had cash and cash equivalents of approximately 398 crores, including the unutilized IPO funds of approximately 195 crores. With respect to the IPO proceeds, utilization remains in line with the stated objects of the issue. During Q4, funds were utilized towards capital expenditure, GCP and issue expenses amounting to approximately rupees 60 crores. Of the total IPO and pre-IPO funds of almost 600 crores, we have utilized 405 crores as at the end of FY26, and the balance 195 crores is planned to be utilized in subsequent periods. To summarize, Q4 FY26 was a quarter of disciplined execution while continuing to invest behind growth and technology. Our margins, balance sheet strength, and diversified revenue base provides a solid foundation as we move to the next phase of growth. Thank you once again for joining us. With this, I hand it back to the moderator to open the floor for the Q&A session.
Thank you. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Devesh Agarwal from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir, and thank you for the opportunity. And many congratulations on good performance. So my first question is on and around margin. If you see in the quarter, we have seen gross margins kind of going up by 150 basis points. I thought because a lot of our costs are import dependent, the rupee depreciation will have a negative carry that hasn't played out in fourth quarter. Is that something that we need to worry about getting into 1Q?
Hi Devesh, this is Pawan here. I'll take that question. So yes, our gross margins have improved in 4Q, and that's been a consistent trend over the last few quarters. Overall, just to give you a summary of how the margins have improved, if I could give you an example, say in our top 50% raw material categories that we consume, we've implemented multiple management initiatives including for procurement consolidation, advanced inventory planning, which are aligned to global trade cycles, and vendor payment being made more efficient. These kind of sourcing optimization initiatives have caused about almost 7 to 8% savings, as we've seen at the material consumed level for the full year. So that's the benefit that we've got through the year and in Q4. Now specifically, if I say for Q4, we see that there's been a impact of adverse foreign exchange movements. While a material that we consume in Q4, a large part of that is also procured, you know, in early Q4 and towards the end of Q3. Now, through Q4, one of the benefits that we've seen is with the higher sales which has come in from Q3, there's obviously an operating leverage which comes in. So that's basically what has played out, Devesh, in Q4 specifically. Overall, I think as we move along, you know, while that is on the gross margin side, to take it a step further, while the gross margins have actually moved below and helped us increase the EBITDA margins and the PAT margins, it's actually a function of two, three things. One, as I've explained to you, it's on gross margin side. The second part is overall reduction in the finance cost in H2 of the year, which has, you know, helped us reduce the cost there. And one third part is in some interest income that we have earned in H2 post IPO funds. I think broadly these four or five things have helped us increase the overall margins.
Understood, sir. And sir, if we see the balance sheet, we see that the working capital intensity in the business has been going up for the last 2 years. The number of, if you see net working capital days, that has been constantly going up. So is the working capital intensity increasing or is it something that going to reverse in FY27?
So I'll take that, Devesh, as well. So while the working capital intensity has, you know, shows as it has increasing over the last, you know, maybe over FY26 and FY25, we should see it in two ways. One, at the end of the year, when you look at the balance sheet as of 31st of March, it's the working capital is a function of what all is on the current asset side and on the liability side. So we've built up our inventories to be able to, you know, better navigate through these global challenges in Q1 as well as, you know, Q4 of the year. And then the second part is post-IPO, we have a good amount of funds which are, you know, showing under cash and cash equivalents. So that may probably give a bit of a lopsided picture as the working capital cycles have increased. But more or less, I would say the key factors there being inventory positions and trade receivables are more or less in line with the business. That's something that we are continuously monitoring and working on as well.
Understood, sir. And then one final question on our IoT business. If you can share some details in terms of new client wins and the traction that we are expecting to build up in FY27 from some of our existing clients.
Yeah, Devesh, thanks. I'll take that question. Pragnya here. See, essentially, what we've seen in Q4 is that some of the large projects on which we've been working for a while, they've started gaining some momentum and they show some good promise for the coming year. So in the larger retailers, customers that we're working on, the approach is now to also go across from apparel into other categories, which is to get into, you know, cosmetics, accessories, etc., which is also a large volume item which needs to be brought into the digital transformation ambit. We're also working on projects, you know, wherein we are going to have localization of our inlay manufacturing now, especially more so with the thrust from the government side also to reduce import dependence. We're also trying to ensure and see how is it that our local chip bonding manufacturing infrastructure can be utilized to ensure that we add more value to our customers as well as it will help us probably add value to our own bottom line by doing more inlay manufacturing within the country. We're also trying to work on tier 2. So what we're now seeing is since tier 1 customers have had very good success and the ROI has been demonstrated quite clearly in their RFID initiatives, we are seeing a lot of traction coming in from tier 2 retailers who would also like to probably start this journey. So that is where we are focusing on some good-sized tier 2 retailers on the RFID side. Also, we've harmonized our technologies between Bluetooth, GPS and RFID and come with some unique solutions where we are helping improve the resource visibility and efficiency in warehousing and logistics sectors. So these are the four areas which we feel on the RFID side. On the SIM side, as we have said, that we have already begun revenue in Q4 of last year. So we feel that the foundation has been set over the last one and a half years in terms of the infrastructure, the certification and the product stability. We feel the SIM and eSIM business will also be adding to the traction in the IoT business. So all in all, to our mind, this vertical looks to, really contribute meaningfully to our growth and overall revenue mix.
Right, sir. That's helpful. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Raghav Maheshwari with Kamayakya Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the question, sir. So, sir, I had a bunch of questions. First of all, sir, can you elaborate a bit on eSIM manufacturing? We have mentioned SIM / eSIM manufacturing. So, what happens when we talk about eSIM manufacturing?
essentially how it works is that these ECMs typically are components which go into a circuitry of a device or an equipment or a vehicle, right? So typically these ECMs come in form factors which are unlike a regular SIM card, and these ECMs have to be then made ready for use on the field, where, for example, it could be converted and connected to any mobile network operators in any geography all over the world. So eSIM infrastructure requires that you are aligned in such a manner that what you produce is globally interoperable in the GSMA universe, right? So we basically are managing the the personalization and putting the embedded top-up layer, which is the profile required as per the device usage, on the eSIM. So and then also, if the customer requires us to probably change the form factor and embed it into a form factor which they would want it to be a plug and play into their environment. So this is what is actually the eSIM. To give a very small example, where eSIM is working today is in electrical meters, right? You would have people coming in and taking meter reading on every single day, but today the electric meters directly talk to the power distribution company. So this could actually sit inside the circuitry of a smart meter. There are various use cases of eSIM, but this is just one example of how eSIM operates.
Right. And have you gained any customers, sir, for this? Like, where do we stand on the approval cycle?
As I said, we've just finished our GSMSS audit. We need to have one more process that we complete by July, August as a part of this process. And once we complete that process, then we should be starting to commercialize this. But in the SIM side of the business, we're already working with a leading telecom player to supply the SIM cards to them.
Right, sir. And so when we talk about payment solution segment, we are continuously seeing, a decline from FY24 to FY25, now FY26 as well. So is it because of the new product mix that we are going into, or is it something else?
Look at it the payment solution business was typically has two revenue drivers. The major one is the payment card business, right? The payment card business typically is driven by four drivers, right? The first one is essentially the renewal cards which bank issue to the existing customers, right? The second one is new cards that are issued when a new account is opened. The third one is credit cards being sold by banks in line with the credit card issuance policy. And the fourth is obviously cards going out for transit programs, for fintechs being selling for specific use cases, you have forex cards, etc. Now, majority of the volume comes in is from renewal card base is an income base which has been built over by the banks over the last couple of decades, right? So the major volume comes in is from your renewal card base. Now, in the renewal card base, post-COVID, which was 2020 March onwards, we had a lull for a year, right, and about a year and a half. So typically what we've seen is that the renewal cycles have been impacted over the last 2 years, okay, majorly because one is the COVID impact, and also banks have been rationalizing their renewal process in terms of, issue card or not. So to our mind, this particular number correction or which has happened is something which is an outcome of this factor. And now, post-COVID, if you see in 21, 22, 22, 23, there has been a surge in the banking sector in terms of volumes, etc. So our understanding is that at least on the renewal side of the business, we see for sure, we expect that the numbers should be better than what they were because of the COVID impact. Coming to new cards which are issued by banks, opening of accounts and credit cards. Now here, it's a factor of the bank's policy at any point in time in terms of what is their strategy in terms of reaching out and onboarding new franchisee customers, what is their strategy on risk mitigation in terms of unsecured lending, how does the regulator increase the risk assignment to the unsecured portfolio of credit cards, etc. So here, we are responding to the customer requirement. We also try to maximize this is also to go up the value chain by premiumizing and going up the value chain by ensuring that we offer more value-added offerings to customers for the same set of customer base, offer more valued services such as logistics services to them, offer metal cards to them, etc. And also we have seen very large traction in the transit program. For example, currently we are working with partners for 3 state government projects which have got pretty decent volumes of cards to be rolled out for the beneficiaries under the state government scheme to transport to the citizens. We are also working on some projects for metro cards with more and more metros coming in. So all in all, our understanding is that the payment card business, you know, the numbers which have come in, we expect this to trend to probably bottom out, and from here on we expect you know, a better momentum to be seen for upward trajectory.
Understood, sir. And sir, with the PIN card division you know, coming live and the approval cycle going on, and the new plans coming live, like you mentioned in the earlier opening remarks, plus all the new segments that we are exploring, assuming these are the growth levers for FY27, would you like to give any formal guidance as to where do we see from growing from this low base?
I would say definitely if you look at the momentum in Q4, you know, we had very good momentum in Q4, and we see some of the projects that were on the anvil, you know, probably moving into fruition in the coming year. However, so considering the you know, the geopolitical situation and also the uncertainty, you know, we would like to probably wait until Q1 where we get a better grip of the situation, better visibility, and you know, we may be positioned to give a guidance after Q1. That's our take for now.
Understood, sir. And sir, last clarification.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Sir Raga, I would request you to please come back in the queue for further questions. Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Pratik Bhantia with Fermi 325 Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congratulations on a great set of numbers. Happy to see the strong scale up in the IoT division as well. So my question was regarding over the last 25 years, it seems like every 5 to 7 years, you know, our business tends to make a pivotal shift. So let's say from checkbooks to cards to RFID tags to now eSIM cards. So I just wanted to get a sense of, you know, what is the underlying guiding theme of our capital allocation strategy, and should we expect the same strategy to continue over the next, let's say, 10 years or so, or would there be some tweaking required?
A very good question, Pratik. See, if you look at it from, you know, from a capital allocation perspective, while we were growing from part of our payment solutions business to our communication and fulfillment business, and even today some part of our IoT business, right? The capital infrastructure, the equipment, and the platforms that are needed, especially the tech platforms, are the same, right? What typically happens is that every vertical has certain adjacencies and spin-offs which require focused investments, maybe into technology or maybe into some specific platforms or investments needed for a product. So I would say, obviously, going forward as we move on and we go into more of IoT devices, there'll be deeper investments going into technology. You know, we will also be having to have, you know, resources which will probably focus on technology. So the theme of the CapEx investment, to my mind, would not change drastically, but probably the allocation towards software resources, towards technology contribution of the investment would go up. And if you would see one thing which is common across the whole theme of the last 25 years, is that we've always gone for businesses which are having recurring revenue, business which need technology, businesses which need to scale, and products which are mandatory or which are needed for our end customers' functioning. So we try and keep those 4 or 5 probably mantras in all that we do, in every vertical that we go to. So we try and keep those as a guiding post in our future business expansions. And probably as the situation unfolds and the investment demands are there, we will allocate our capital accordingly.
Okay, thank you so much. Could you provide utilization for the RFID capacity during the year as well as the quarter?
So overall, during the year, our RFID capacity was hovering around 70%. During the quarter, we had some spike volume, so I think we were probably close to around 80-85% capacity utilization during the last quarter.
Okay, and my last question before I get back in the queue is, can you provide the capacity breakup for SIM as well as eSIM?
See, SIM is a very nascent business for us right now. So, you know, we are probably on the same side, we are probably just around 30% capacity utilization of what the state capacity is. eSIM, we are yet to start commercial production, you know, which we expect to start off, you know, once certain integration processes are over and the final leg of our, you know, compliance is done. So probably we will expect eSIM revenues to help us from H2 of this year.
So what is the installed capacity for SIM cards?
We've got a capacity to about 7 million SIMs a month.
Okay, and eSIMs, if you could provide?
SIMs, I mean, eSIMs, there's no, see, the eSIM product is not a very standard product like the SIM product, right? The form factor varies on the device. So, you know, conceptually, you know, we can easily do about 2-2.5 million SIMs, but the form factor varies, and it could probably be 2 million for one form factor, and maybe it could land up being same for another form factor. So it would be a range of between 2 to 3 million SIMs, eSIMs a month.
Okay. Oh, thank you so much, Anil. I'll be back in the queue.
The next question comes from the line of Surya Narayan with Sunidhi Securities and Finance Limited. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes.
Surya, we can't hear you. Can you please use your handset?
Yeah. Am I audible now?
Yes, Surya.
Am I audible?
Yes, you're audible.
Am I audible?
Yes, you're audible to us. Go ahead.
Okay. So my question is that, you know, in the IoT solutions, what are the new, I mean, you said that, you know, the improvement in the gross margin is due to the product mix. So compared to last year, if you can, you know, in detail out what are the product mix changes, number one. And number two is that, what are the new sectors? You know, I understood that, you know, there are a lot of sectors like, you know, solar sectors where the applications are there, and apart from many other sectors are lying ahead. So my understanding is that, you know, where we are not present, you know, let's say maybe at the moment, what are the new sectors we are targeting going forward?
Okay, so there are three parts to your question. The first part is you want to have an idea about the product mix, right? So typically the product mix change is there for each and every vertical, but conceptually the approach towards the product mix is that we try and work with the customer to ensure that we get greater market share of the premiumization of the products that they do, okay? And also we try and add, go up the value chain. For example, if you are not offering logistics service to a customer, whether he's in the payment solutions business or the communication fulfillment solutions business, we try and ensure that we get the, you know, the end-to-end piece of the entire chain till the customer delivery. So that adds to our product mix. Obviously, metal card is a growth engine for us, which is also going to be contributing to the product mix for better margin. On the IoT side of the business, you know, to answer your question as to what are the sectors that we are not working with, see, you rightly said we are already working in renewables. Now there, just apart from only giving the tag, our team has been working with some of the large brands to working on reducing their manpower utilization. We've been offering some automation solutions onto their lines for the solar panel manufacturing, offered them some things to aid their quality control process, etc., which makes the relationship stickier, gets better value in terms of the account revenue, and obviously the product mix goes up the value cycle. Now, if you ask me which are the areas which are not working on today and which show great promise in the future, just to tell you that grocery and pharmaceuticals are the two themes which are globally picking up pace in the Western world. And typically, you know, the nature of the or the way it functions, probably we may lag maybe 12 to 18 months for a rollout in India. But because India is the large pharma outsourcing factory of the world, you know, we're already doing small POCs there. But grocery is one very, very huge opportunity which has already gone live with some large brands in Europe and US. And we haven't tapped those opportunities in India yet. So probably to answer your question, two large opportunities which we have not worked with but which are going to be very promising in future is grocery and pharma.
In textiles also, sir, the traceability is a factor where, you know, there are a lot of opportunities are there, especially when the EU FTA and UK FTA will be coming first. So, you know, are we working towards that in the traceability sector, textile?
There's a concept known as European Union Digital Passport, which requires end-to-end traceability for everything that is going to be imported in the European Union. But, you know, there are multiple ways to achieve that. You can achieve that using QR codes. You can achieve that using barcodes. You can also achieve that using RFID. So we're just kind of talking to large exporters who need these facilities, RFIDs. For example, for Walmart, we're already Walmart approved vendor list for RFID. So I think the EUDP guidelines may not really mandate RFID, but wherever the opportunity exists, you know, for traceability, I think it will only go in, RFID in EUDP will go in only in items which are having high value, which are very critical, especially related to health and safety. So probably it will be a mixed bag opportunity there between conventional traceability products and RFID.
Okay. Sir, in terms of global capability of ours, you know, competitiveness, so just to want to understand, because most of the products are also can be adopted by any of the countries. So, you know, globally, how much we are competitive compared to leading players, leading countries? If you can give some ballpark figure to understand so that, you know, we can also go global.
Good question. So I would say first we need to understand that the RFID frequencies vary for every country. And obviously, we in India, we have a certain frequency range within which the products are produced and used. Now, typically, in the RFID ecosystem, what really matters is how much of innovation are you able to do for a specific customer problem solving or customer use case, which requires, you know, strengths of antenna design, antenna simulation, R&D labs, also requires test bench to test the performance of this in the environment, and also then produce it and scale it and do your own semiconductor chip bonding. So probably this particular process is a science, right? And we've been working on it for the last 2.5 years, seen some good success on solving some, you know, customer problems for large retailers where we've domestically innovated and created very cost-effective solutions to meet their traceability needs. So to answer your question, from a global perspective, an opportunity presents itself. Probably we have the know-how, the team, resources, and now the understanding of technology good enough to be able to compete with the best in the world. It's just a matter of we first trying to focus on the domestic market, getting an act together, getting a few good case studies under our belt, and then we will work with partners to explore the, you know, the global market.
Understood. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Zaki Nasir, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
So, am I audible?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Sir, congratulations on a pretty stable set of numbers. Sir, going forward, our issue, public issue was hardly 6 months back, and we had a certain value proposition for the company. So do you think that going forward in the current year, that value proposition will play out, sir, with a small lag? Because we came at a certain valuation and maybe the markets, maybe a small lag in the performance coming in, or maybe just the perception that investors have not understood the company well, sir. So your thoughts on this issue, sir. Thank you.
Our thought is, sir, that we always believed in performance and we believe in growth. and we continue to reaffirm our commitment to those two attributes. To my mind, our job is to ensure that we grow, we innovate, we deliver, and remain profitable. Right? How the market perceives us, really depends on our hand in terms of how we communicate, how we, and this is one exercise in that direction. Now, how the market valuates us, sir, is a matter which is probably left to the market. But at our end, we are ensuring that you know whatever our story, whatever our probably business focus, which was there prior to the IPO, during the IPO, still remains. There's absolutely no loss of focus or loss of business intensity from our side. And probably as we said earlier, that many times you're facing some structural headwinds because of factors beyond our control, which are more to do with regulatory in nature, which are also need to be doing the nature of the consumption pattern, right? We feel that those are behind us now, and also with the IoT engine growing well. For example, last year in the IoT business we grew close to about 48%. We expect to at least match that, if not better that number in the coming year. And also we see some stability in our communication and fulfillment business. There could be a marginal decline, but overall we are fine with that. And as I said earlier, on the metal card side also, we have good visibility this year in terms of growing that business as well as the base payment card business. So from our perspective, we still carry the same value proposition that we carried prior to the IPO along with the IPO. And we just hope that the environment allows us to amply demonstrate our intent and execute and deliver on that.
Would you say that, the fund's implementation of the IPO and it will take a lag of a couple of quarters. So do you think the full potential of CSSI will pan out in the current year, sir?
I think whenever we operate, sir, we try to operate at our full potential. As I said earlier also, we need to understand the nature of our industry and nature of our products. We are an industry which is probably a product-led industry, also having the pseudo nature of a services industry, right? Quite a lot of our demand is generated by our end customers, okay, whose demand is also generated, as we explained earlier, certain factors, which are driven by their strategies, driven by the regulator, driven by the market. Okay? So there we are probably working on a back-to-back business model basis where however customers strategize their business demand. One thing I can assure you is that at CSSI, when a customer demands and customer needs us to scale, when customer needs us to deliver, when customer needs us to ensure we innovate, we are there, right? From a business side, we have not essentially lost any major account. We ensure that our shares in those accounts remain the same. We've also ensured that, for example, we've added 21 new accounts in the payment business this year. We've added close to 65 new customers in the IoT business. We've added close to 8 customers in the CFS business. So from our perspective, the energy and the zeal is there to grow. Some of it is definitely a factor of how our enterprise customers themselves generate demand. But I can assure you that from our side, in any given year, we are here to perform to our full potential. We should just await for the circumstances allow us to do that.
Thank you, sir. Best wishes. Best wishes.
The next question comes from the line of Yashwant Shubham with ICICI. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. You're audible.
So I just wanted to ask on the international front, like how is the expansion plan going on currently, war situation, and also if you have any setup, any personalization bureau in any country, and one last question on the revenue front, like what is the portion of our international revenue under in FY26 or Q4?
As part of our strategy, at least for FY26, okay, we've been working on some international opportunities where we're working with partners in those countries,
and we strengthen our partners and work on a back-to-back basis with them on the local opportunities on which they have been working. In this year, we will be deepening our focus on the international opportunities, especially on some of our niche products, both in IoT and the payment solutions business. For this current year, we do not have any plans to open a personalization bureau in the overseas market. And we also probably are focusing on to answer your question on the revenue, in FY, Paul will take that piece, yeah.
Yeah, so we do not have a significant export revenue currently. However, we're working on some of our products and evolving the portfolios on that. For revenue on exports has been about 3 crores in FY26.
Okay, and last question, if you have any like any contracts or any agreement under discussion with on the international front currently going on?
So as I said in my opening remarks, that there are some large overseas fintech players who shortlisted us in their global RFP. So there are companies on which we are working right now, but they are still under stage of evaluation, so we do not have revenue visibility as of now on that. But it's been a process through which we've gone through for almost about last 4 to 5 months, and we, you know, expect some positive outcomes from that.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Vedant Agarwal with IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. First of all, it's a great set of numbers. I wanted to ask that what are the type of guidance that you're building in for FY27? If you could share the YY growth for all the three business segments. And one more question, that what sort of a capex can we expect going forward?
So, Vedant, hi, this is Pawan. I'll answer that. So, as we discussed earlier in the call, considering the existing geopolitical situation and the
I'm sorry to interrupt, sir. From the management line, there is some disturbance, sir. If you can come closer to the mic and speak.
Is it better now?
Yeah, it's better. Thank you.
So, yeah, my answer to Vedant. Vedant, at this point of time, it's difficult to give guidance for FY27, considering the macroeconomic environment, etc. So, we'll refrain from doing that and see how things go, and then, you know, probably see back on this at the end of Q1. On the CapEx side, we have a plan of, you know, investing close to about 160 to 200 odd crores through the year across payment solutions and IoT business verticals, as well as overall modernization. So with some funds would come in from the IPO fund.
Okay, sir, thank you so much. That answers my question.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Maitri Shah with FIA Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, am I audible?
Yes, you're audible. Go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you for this opportunity. Just one question. So once the IoT solution kind of scales up with SIMs and eSIMs going forward for the next year, how do you see the proportion of the business kind of change? That the kind of business mix is changing, which is helping out with the margins. So do you expect the IoT solution to start contributing close to 20% of the overall revenue? And how do you see that kind of scaling up and then kind of like effect on margins growing for the next 1 to 2 years?
We've grown in the IoT business pretty strongly over the last 2 years. And as I said, this year the IoT business grew, I think, 47% YOY between FY25 to FY26. So the current business outlook that we have for FY27 on the IoT business, we expect that number should be definitely better than what this year was. We should be definitely growing up of 47% on the IoT business. And obviously, if we continue to grow at that brisk pace, the overall contribution of IoT to the revenue will proportionately increase as it has been doing over the last few years. And you know, as we see the IoT business, the nature of the business as it is, it would contribute more meaningfully towards the overall margin.
Any quantification on how you see the margin scaling up the one to the next year and a half? Any near-term guidance on the margins you have with the SIM and the eSIM coming in and this business kind of contributing more?
So, Natalie,
I'm sorry, but I can't hear you clearly.
Is it any better now?
Yeah, better.
Yeah. So on the margin side as well, while we've got a good set of numbers for FY26 ended, we'd want to, you know, probably wait and see how the situation evolves in terms of the foreign exchange pricing as well as the input prices across materials which are rising. And see how the situation evolves to get a better sense of the numbers for the future. But as Mr. Pranath said, as the product mix moves with IoT and eSIM and other solutions, we definitely expect a good set of numbers.
Yeah, that is it from my side. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Chintan Shah from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. So I have three questions. So first one is, needed more clarification on this patent that we have secured for metal cards. So just wanted to know, does this sort of grant any exclusivity to us that this card can be manufactured only by us and not peers, or is this something else?
The patent regime works, Chintan, is that you file your patent for some innovation that you've done and some novelty that you achieved in producing that product, right? So as long as we are producing that product using that patent, you know, you'll be obviously producing it in absolutely trouble-free with that patent. While it gives a person a patent to launch or use that product or manufacture in a certain way, it does not refer anybody else if he's got another novelty or innovation to produce his product, right? So that's how the patenting regime works, that if there are, you know, multiple people who've got their patents granted for the way they produce their product, they can continue to produce their product, provided they comply with the process that they defined in their patent.
Got it, understood. So just one more follow-up here. What would be the mix of, say, metal cards, which are probably in terms of value for FY26? And with this patent now in place, does it mean that from here on we could you know, have more discussion with clients and probably we could see a meaningfully higher growth versus in the past?
Chintan, I've got this question for a couple of people. So I don't know where this confusion is getting created in the ecosystem. I'll just try to clarify this. We have filed for a patent in October of 2021, okay? So when you have a novelty and you file for it, you're protected from the day you file it. So there's never a case that you produce a product and then you grant get a patent granted and then you can go out to sell. We've been selling for the last 3 years a product which has been protected by our own IP and our own novelty and innovation, right? It's just the process takes time, you know, to get granted. So from a business perspective, there never was any difference in the way we are considering ourselves or the way we are offering the product to customers, all along protected and always remain protected. So I don't think it was any big business enabler. It becomes, I would say, a disabler, but it becomes a big enabler now that it is granted, and you know, then you know, we are in a better shape to ensure that what we are using is you know, is not transgressed or violated by anybody else. Yes.
Got it. Understood. That's very clear. And if you could call out sort of the mix in our payment solution business, the metal card mix.
Yes, I would say, no, right now the metal card overall in the payment solution business contributes close to about 4% of it.
Okay.
And we see that, you know, hopefully to improve the coming year.
Got it. Understood. And secondly, on the RFID side, so we were in the process of, you know, starting to monetize our software aspect as well. So just wanted to know from your side if there's any update out there and are we seeing any traction with customers?
We've done some interesting projects on the IoT side. So, you know, for example, we've done a project with a large power generating company where we rolled out our software using Bluetooth and RFID for handling their assets on a 10 square kilometer large plant which under where our software is integrated both in the handheld devices or cloud. So, we've taken a very calibrated approach here with specific use cases. There are, I think, a couple of them which have been rolled out now, and the platform is very stable. Now, with that behind us, we will be probably focusing on larger opportunities or rollouts into larger ecosystems.
Got it. Understood. That's good to hear. And just last question from my side, are we sort of any plans to do some backward integration into chips for our payment solution business, or?
I think, Chintan, we've probably parked that question for some time. Once we make some good progress on that, we'll probably share that in due course.
Okay. Okay, fine. I got it. Understood. Thank you so much for answering all the questions.
The next question is a follow-up question. It's on the line of Pratik Banthia. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. I just wanted to ask, you stated about, doing Indian manufacturing in-house probably in the future. So what kind of margin impact does, backward integration, bring in? And any aspirational timeline of, when you would want to start doing Indian manufacturing?
That's a good question, Pratik. See, I'll tell you, we already have our equipment for Indian manufacturing for the last 2.5 years. Okay. Now, this is a very probably sophisticated and intricate process because we're handling very, very, nano wafers and putting them onto RFID antenna. We also, as a part of the IPO process, scaled up our manufacturing, and now we have 3 plants and do Indian manufacturing. The current situation, especially when the supply chain to be constrained, challenges to come in terms of the supply from pricing volatility due to the currency fluctuation. We feel this is going to be a very strategic tool for us to increase our market share, to increase our profitability, and also to contribute to the nation in terms of reducing dependence. We're already working on our own RFID inlays for the solar market, and of course, are very innovative cosmetics industry. So the local Indian manufacturing has mature. Definitely, when we buy the inlay from a third party versus when you make the inlay yourself, it'll have better margins. We will need to reach a little more scale, by which time we will be able to have meaningful contribution of it towards the bottom. Hello?
Hello. I think there's some disturbance on the line.
I hope the last answer was clear.
I just heard I need a little more scale for starting Indian manufacturing. Is that right?
Yes, I just said that we've kind of now slowly scaling up the Indian manufacturing. So once we right scale, then it will contribute more meaningfully towards our bottom line in terms of saving costs.
Okay. Thank you so much. That answers. Thank you.
Thank you. The next follow-up question comes from Surya Narayan. Please go ahead. Surya Narayan,
hello.
Your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question. Hello, Surya Narayan, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. So just to understand the margin improvement likely from here onwards due to the backward integration, so what kind of margin increment possible for FY 2027 and 2028?
as we said, due to the current geopolitical situation, the macroeconomic factors, the currency fluctuation, the challenges that every business is faced in terms of, times, cost, etc., probably would not want to give any guidance at this stage, travel some more distance and have better visibility on how this whole crisis is playing out. Then we will be able to take a position to guidance.
Okay, and sir, in the payment solution business, what is the current market share in the banking industry we are having, and what kind of vision we carry for FY30?
Basically, the market share data which was last published was on FY25 by the analyst, and there we had a market share of 31.6%. Of the payment cards market in India. Now, as we said, for FY30, our approach has been constantly ensure that we are relevant to the customer's evolving needs. So we are focusing on premiumization, we are focusing on metal cards. We also have cards certified by payment schemes, biometric cards. We see sustainability being a very important aspect for banks. Where they would like to ensure that the carbon footprint is reduced. They have their own sustainability goals. So we're also working on sustainable cards, both using recycled PVC as well as for wooden cards. And obviously, as the new generation comes in, the new payment form factors coming in. We've done some innovation around feature phone automation, new technologies for some large public sector banks, which we cannot reveal under NDA. So our approach has been to always keep innovating as to what are the evolving needs of the customer and the customer's customer and remain relevant. So you can rest assured that whatever is the payment landscape by 2030, SESHI SAI would be a sizable value contributor in that ecosystem.
In the card business, what is the current percentage of non-NBFC business we are having?
Non-NBFC.
Yeah.
So essentially, most of our customers are non-NBFC customers, which are basically.
BFSI. Sorry, not NBFC, BFSI.
Oh, okay. So probably, we work with the non-BFSI customers are typically customers who work as system integrators for transit projects.
So your voice is cracking, sir.
Basically, the non-BFSI customers are customers who work as system integrators for large transit projects, some of them who work for forex cards, gift cards, etc. So probably the non-BFSI in the payment card business, is close to, how much is it? It's close to about, more or less about 4% of the total payment card business, yes.
Okay. So there are a lot of other programs of the government. For many programs, social welfare programs. So are you also interested to look at those spaces, considering the challenges from the government side? In terms of, let's say, working capital issues. So are we interested to have all those areas in our portfolio?
Good question. I'll break it into three parts. See, one is the banks issue Mudra cards, the bank issue Kisan credit cards, okay? The bank also issues some financial inclusion cards. So that obviously we do it, being a service provider aligned to a particular bank who's conducting that program for the respective government agency, okay? So we do that mandated by our banking customers. On the second side, we also work on projects where, for example, there's a free transport offered to a certain entitled category in the state. Okay, it could be also for students, it could be for senior citizens, it could be for veterans of the armed forces, it could be for women. They're the system integrators, and we work back to back where we give them the cards, which have got the wallets onto them, and the wallets are structured in such a manner that the discounting of the beneficiary is reflected into the wallet logic built into the card. So we work, right now we work on three state government projects, which are for beneficiaries for, for transport, probably announcement which have been done as part of the government's manifesto. And the third aspect, which we are seeing some interest now, we are working on some pilot projects where certain state governments are evaluating working on a single card platform across multiple benefits that they're giving. You know, it's just at a conceptual stage now, but you know, as it evolves, you know, we would like to play a role there as well.
Okay, okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference call over to the management for closing comments.
It has been a pleasure interacting with you all today. We appreciate your continued trust and support. Thank you.
Thank you once again, everyone, for joining us today. It was lovely interacting with all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of CSSI Technologies Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.